Hello, and thanks for listening to the Kept Faith Podcast. I'm Nick McCann, and I'm joined by Travis Russell.
Hey, RIP Padre Pete, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, it's somber days with the passing of Peter Seidler. He's that 63-year-old owner of the San Diego Padres, or chairman also. It's wild that this happened right in the middle of the off season when we were trying to figure out our manager, and then boom, you know.
Puts it in perspective pretty quick, huh? How what really matters is and stuff. And it's been nice to see the reaction, like so much focused on the type of person he was and how he made people feel. So
yeah, well, that's what we're going to spend the episode talking about, is just unpacking what Peter brought to San Diego and the Padres. And I think he inspired all of us to do a lot of to take risks. I think that was part of it. But we'll get into that. Today we have a very special guest, Mark Wilkins from Mad Friars and the KeptFaith.com. As of this week, also he's written for us before, but Mark posted an article on the Kept Faith Day. I encourage you to maybe press pause and go read it. It's a farewell to Peter Seidler. I think that's what the title is, but you'll see it. It's at the top of the feed. Mark, thanks for coming on. I wish it was under better circumstances, but you really knocked it out of the park with that piece. I think you captured a lot of what everybody was thinking. So how are you doing?
Pretty well under these circumstances, and you know, it's great to be here, and thank you guys for having me and for hosting the piece on the website. Just trying to tie together a lot of the themes that I think from a fan perspective that we felt. I mean, I didn't know Peter Seidler. It was nice to hear, all morning today, Ben and Woods, and hearing yesterday on the afternoon shows, just throughout the day, from people who did know him. It kind of confirmed a lot of what I think we felt. And I think that's always a good thing, because, you know, with a public figure, sometimes what you feel as a fan or as someone who enjoys the work, it doesn't always add up to who that person is when you hear the personal stories, but you just hear it just 100% across the board. These stories that we never knew either. Like those weren't things that went out there all the time about things that he did outside of the team. So that was cool to hear.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, a big component of your piece that you wrote was tracking it back to, you know, the beginning of your baseball just fandom and just interest overall, and how, you know, I had a very similar experience, but, you know, where you're told about the owner and you're supposed to stop looking at the game on one level on the field and start looking and evaluating who's in charge of the whole thing. And the owner is something you repeat in the piece over and over again, because I had that experience as well, where, you know, the fire sale happens and you start focusing on what the owner's finances are instead of just, oh, I like that player, he's on my team and this is fun. You know, it gets a lot more complicated, and there's you start to grow up a little bit with it faster than you probably should. And I think we all did that as Padres fans, but I thought that was really a good way to bring it back and tie it into what Peter did and how he kind of broke that down and didn't feel like the older owners that we've had here. I mean, that's basically the experience of all Padres fans, is having these owners who are either aloof, or, you know, they're not spending enough and they seem faceless corporate people. And this guy was different. And I think you kind of painted that picture pretty well.
Yeah. I mean, the concept of the owner is almost this faceless entity for so many fans growing up. And when I was a kid, and when we were all kids, it's like that first lesson where you're like, wait, someone owns this team. Like, it's the San Diego Padres. Like, how is it not? It's just something that we go to, and there's a manager. And like, when I was that age, I probably just thought that, at the time would have been like Jim Riggleman just set the lineups and they just went for it. And the first time you hear like, oh, there's someone who owns this thing, and he's going to decide how much money he's going to put into it. And when owners made the news back then, it was pretty much for terrible stuff. It was like Marge Schott and you know, when George Steinbrenner would pop off or something. And it was like, so owners being like publicly known was usually a kind of a negative. And what Peter was different for us was the whole country was talking about him. And sometimes they're talking about him negatively, but if they were, it was because they didn't like that he was spending so much money. Otherwise, you never heard like, oh, Peter did this or that. It was like, hey, you know, he sees the team at least outwardly as a community institution, which is something that we grew up probably uh-huh. thinking it was when we were little. And, you know, you compare that to like a John Fisher with what's going on with the A's at yeah. this very moment. And I think it was Joel Sheehan really touched on that. And it's night and day. It's two billionaires, and you have one who keeps acting like he's mistreated, and he's got the short end of the stick, and he's going to go to Las Vegas and figure it out. And that's his right. But as a fan, that's not what you want to hear. That's not what you want to deal with when you've invested everything in it.
Yeah. Yeah. When the fire sale happened in the 90s, and I was kind of brought into thinking about the game this way, that way, is I really struggled with my dad explaining to me that he has to trade the expensive players so he can save money, and it'll make the sale of the team more attractive to somebody else. And I'm like 13 and or 12, and I'm like trying to process that and not really being able to understand why I have to think about the overall franchise value and all that. And I think Peter did a great job of just kind of not really making it about himself and just going for it. There's this attitude of just going for it and risking it and not caring about the consequences necessarily down the road and just living your life like that. I you know, he's not a person that I ever knew. I never met him. I don't have any great story about talking to him, or I'm sure he was a warm, kind person, but he just kind of wrote checks, and it made me feel better about being a San Diegan. And I'll always be touched by it. I mean, it's kind of probably messed up in a way that, you know, that I have to unpack later, but his spending and his free loving concept of how to run a team like this was just touching to me. It really was. And, you know, we all felt it last year when they made it to the NLCS and everything that happened with that. It was just, he gave us so much, and it's baffling to think about what it'll be like without him, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you hear a lot about from people, especially who knew him, they talk about how he viewed the team like a fan. And certainly from our perspective, he ran it like probably a fan would. I mean, I think most of us would have traded for Juan Soto given the chance. I think most of us would have thrown out some big contracts and gone for it and said, this team doesn't have to be like this. And yeah, it's an inspiring thing. And it's something where the uncertainty going forward, it hurts, because if the family stays in charge of it, you just don't know if they'll run it the same way financially, knowing that maybe they want to break even to keep it long-term or other things that we don't know. I mean, the bottom line is we don't know, but with the change in how the team ran, you know, growing up, yeah, you're presented with business realities where you're like, why, like you said, why is this something that I'm concerned with? I'm a 12-year-old kid watching baseball. And I remember being told like, oh, you know, Gary Matthews Jr. will be the young cheap option in the outfield. And I was like, well, that's great. But what does a cheap option have to do with me being a fan of this team? What does it have to do with like, why should I care? And he took a lot of that care off of our plate. I mean, for a 3-year span, we didn't have to worry about, up until maybe the deadline with Snell and Hader, there wasn't really a chance of, hey, maybe he's not going to keep this guy. Cause every time he said, oh, we're going to sign him, they did. And the only one that's really left open ended right now is Juan Soto for various reasons. But every other time where he said, hey, we're going to do this, they did. And first of all, you never had an owner that just said that. You never had an owner that said, oh no, don't worry about it. The owner, well, it's always like, at best, it's, well, if it makes sense for both sides, we'll do something and we'll have to see what's going on out there. But there wasn't even that pragmatism. There was just kind of that shoot from the hip, like, oh no, we're going to do that. We're going to build this payroll, and we're going to go for a World Series. And when you first hear that, you're kind of like, yeah, great. You know, a lot of people have told us a lot of things in this town, and look where we are now. But for him to just do that was just a mindset that most teams haven't had. I mean, the only other teams that have are Yankees level franchises, and for him to take the Padres and just say, yeah, we can do that too. It's something that we always felt like we knew, but the checks weren't being written to reflect that at all.
Yeah. And Travis, you're a season ticket holder. Like, do you think that this changes your outlook as a customer, you know, like that? I mean, I don't have season tickets, so I wonder, like, how you're feeling today about the future of that investment. Do you feel like it is uncertain in a way that you don't?
I've actually tried not to think about it. There's a few posts on Twitter already talking about how, you know, we shouldn't talk about the money yet or anything like that, and I really don't want to get there. But I am very actually concerned only in the fact that the prices have been going up steadily. And now it's kind of like, well, is this going to keep going? Do we have someone with the generosity taking the reins now that's going to kind of keep the same spirit going, you know, or do we just now have this new price increase all the time? You know, it's a very open-ended thing. Again, I don't want to think about it because, you know, this is very new and we should be celebrating his life. But yes, there is this thing that I don't want to deal with in a couple months down the road for sure.
Well, I think he also, you know, I always felt, and I appreciated this from Peter. I think you touched on it, Mark, where it's, you know, he is, I don't know if I would say like he treated the Padres like his toy, but it was something that he enjoyed in a singular way. I think apart from his family, I always gathered that this was his thing that he was doing and he was having a lot of fun with it, whether or not he knew this was towards the end of his life or not, you know, whatever, but he definitely was going out, you know, like I'm going to do this. This is going to be a fun way to just live my life at the end of it, probably, you know, and I don't know if we're going to have that moving forward. And that's the harrowing thing about it, right? Like, we don't know if the family members that are, you know, taking it over have the same passion that he did. And, you know, his passion turns out with the ownership class is rare, right? And I haven't really heard yet exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it's completely different. It's we're used to the owner showing up sometimes, probably sitting in a box, not really engaged in a certain way. And sometimes they only appear when things are really wrong or when they have to say something like almost like you see owners like the Reds owner where they kind of chide the fans for not showing up. And that's kind of what you usually kind of see the owner for. So for him to just have this like it became a real outlet for him in a way that I don't think you see from a lot of billionaires. You don't see a lot of people where it's like, I want to see this go to a certain point from a baseball perspective. Maybe they want to see it go from a ballpark perspective or some other investment, but he didn't even look at it like an investment. And that's something that, and not to touch too much on, you know, finances and everything else. Cause like Travis said, it's a time to talk about him and what's going on. But when I start to hear like, you know, equity partner guys are walking around the park, it's a completely different feeling. Even though he ran an equity firm, it didn't feel like it at all, but anyone else involved in it, it probably will.
Yeah. And is that person, you know, I think that was a big thing with Peter Seidler and when the organization was firing at all cylinders and it was the most fun for us, even as fans, was that he seemed to enjoy entering into the baseball world that he entered into as being kind of a maverick and spending money in a way that pissed a lot of people off. Like you would hear the old guard kind of say things like the Padres can't possibly be doing this. They can't be doing this ever. This is just so insane that the Padres are spending. And it's always felt like he seemed to enjoy that. And Preller seemed to piss people off on his level. And, you know, with down to the players, Manny and Tatis had this sheen of like, we're the fun team and we don't care what you think about it. And obviously that blew up in our face last season, which that was really hard to watch, but it did feel like from the top down when the organization was firing in all cylinders, they did like to disrupt things with people. You know, I mean, I was watching MLB or the MLB Network today and Al Leiter's talking about like, you know, Peter Seidler's passing and everything. He's being very respectful, but he's also just talking. He just, as a former player in the era that he came up with, the idea that the Padres would be a top three payroll was just mind blowing to him. He still couldn't even wrap his head around it. And I think that was the most fun part about the Peter Seidler era for me was that we could kind of circle the wagons around the party that he had started and just hate everybody. You know, we could defend Manny for, you know, him pissing people off on the field, and Tatis was like brash and kind of bringing in this new generation of star, and Peter was pissing people off at his level, and Preller was doing it. And you know, that's what I'll always remember, is just it was fun to be a Padres fan because it seemed like we were doing it in a way that was different than what Brian McCann thought it should be. You know what I mean? Like, that's what it felt like to me. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
And one thing that was kind of funny to me was we went from a team that Hosmer was like the first major free agent signing ever. Uh-huh. And then all of a sudden by 2020, the team was, you could not drop a rumor of a single player being available anywhere without the Padres being attached to it, which was just absolute insanity when you think about it. And now we're just used to it. Now it's like right now, even on this day, when the team goes back to talking about business next week, Ohtani's not off the table in anyone's mind. Do I realistically think it? No, but there's no one that's going to say, oh, the Padres are out on this or that until they actually show what their course of action is. And for the last 3 years, it's been literally every single thing. I mean, there are times where people are saying there's just no way on this planet that Juan Soto is going to wear that uniform. And then he did. I mean, that's just beyond what they've never delivered in that way. And it made it where the media had to actually change their course of action, where you couldn't turn on MLB Network without them saying, and of course, the Padres are in on this one, too.
Yeah, I mean, I remember we've had podcasts in the middle of it, really, when they were spending and doing crazy stuff like that. We had a couple trade deadlines and off seasons where it was just, oh, there's a problem. Well, Peter's just going to fix it. I mean, I don't care. We knew that he was going to just write a check and fix it. And it was just, it just felt fun to be that brash and have the backing to really just throw down and create a party. I mean, he really did that at the end of his life, and it's really amazing. And that's beside all the, you know, the stuff he did in the community, which you're here. I didn't really know a whole lot about how involved he was, and it's pretty jaw-dropping, like the impact that he did have all over the region, you know. So what do you guys think? I mean, we are in the midst of trying to decide on a manager. We were going to record tonight and talk about the manager search and what that was. Obviously that's the conversation's changed in Padres land, but you know, have you guys been following that? I mean, where do you land, Travis? Who do you want to be the next manager of the Padres?
Bruce Bochy, is he available? That's who I want. No. Who I've always wanted. And after what happened in this
a World Series happened.
It's
a World
just Series like, happened. Gosh, that should have been us. That's just how I felt. Out of the names that are out there, I could care less. Like, I really don't have a horse in the race amongst those, the names that are being rumored right now. It does feel like a hot mess, though. I mean, I don't know how many times we talked about it since Bo Mel left, but like it. That is just a weird situation all around, where it's, he's definitely staying. Then he gets allowed to talk to another organization, which I've never heard of before. Once you say you're staying, I don't know. It's a really exhausting scenario. I feel like we've just been doing this over and over and over. And we go from, you know, the new guy that they're going to train into like the old pro back to the, you know, the guy that's good with the clubhouse. I don't know what to do at this point. It feels like we've pushed every button.
What about you, Mark? Are you leaning towards anybody that of the possibles?
If it is down to Shelton Nevin, like AC says, I would be leaning Nevin, but it's a push so much. I mean, Shilt is a former manager of the year who allegedly created a toxic environment in St. Louis, which would explain why he's been here for 2 years and I haven't heard him getting interest in other places, which is weird for a guy who had that kind of success. Nevin, we know Anaheim didn't go well. It depends on how much you believe would come from the manager and how much would come from just the chaos upstairs. No one's really succeeded there in a long time. He was a pretty big managing prospect when he was a coach for the Giants and the Yankees. I'm not a real sentimentalist with managers. I'm not going to sit there and be like, oh, this gets the Qualcomm gang back together or anything. Yeah. That's not a huge, I mean, the way he left town wasn't the best, but I mean, joining the club, right. I'm willing to forgive on that, I guess. But it's something where if those are the two guys, I'd probably lean Nevin. If it's a bigger pool, from the start, I was probably, I guess I was on the Shilt corner just because I really don't want Flaherty, because Flaherty is just another, it just feels like going back to Taylor. And that's just not it.
I mean, I don't really have a lot of confidence in in any of the picks that just because I don't have a lot of confidence in Preller's ability to work with people at that level. I just don't, he's obviously shown that even guys that he's been friends with, he can't work with managers. And that's a huge problem with Peter gone. I wonder what that means for Preller moving forward. It seemed like they had a very special relationship that worked for them, but I don't know. Phil Nevin, I just thought he was such a joyless baseball player. I really didn't like his personality, and I really don't want him back in my life at all. But I don't know much about Schilt, so I don't know. But it does seem like, doesn't it seem like if you can't work with Bob Melvin, like, who are you going to work with in baseball? I mean,
we literally went from, Andy Green was kind of a young managing prospect. And then you go and Jace Tingler was literally like, they're talking about, oh, it's an extension of Preller onto the field. And then you go, okay, that didn't work. Let's turn and bring in an established big time manager. And after that, it's kind of like, well, what move do you make? And Schilt would be, Schilt's almost like just going to another flavor of Bowmel in a way, but it's one that obviously works at least well with Preller in a development capacity. Is he just saying the things he needs to say to get back in the game managing? That's always a question. For Nevin, it's, you always wonder how many chances does a manager get? They usually get at least two. But is this the right one? And with Nevin also, like the feeling with Schilt is you wouldn't have to change out too much of the staff. Obviously Niebla's not going anywhere. That doesn't matter, but you would just change out the pieces that Bowmel brought to San Francisco. But with Nevin, it's like, would he want to reboot? How much of that would change? Not tremendously. I mean, it's not so much where you reconsider the position or anything, but if you're in a win now mode, does Schilt just kind of plug in? And I think that's maybe the thought that they had at the start. But the fact that Nevin's been building momentum is really kind of interesting to me, because is it about Nevin building momentum, or is it about another manager because Schilt is just not tenable? I mean, he didn't interview anywhere else, right?
I haven't heard of it. That the stuff with the Cardinals is kind of alarming, right? I don't know if I like the idea of not having that much turnover as far as the other positions in the coaching staff. Have you, something that's been talked about for a while now is that, and maybe you've seen this, and I don't know if, I guess you haven't seen this, but the idea that, that Preller might benefit from becoming like the actual president and having a GM under him, who could talk publicly in the media and explain things in a better way and just maybe not talk to the manager, not be tasked with talking to the manager. So, I mean, do you think that would benefit as far as how the organization is structured, like having some kind of buffer between him and human beings?
If he follows it. I mean, I think the feeling is like, If you bring in a GM just to do PR, that's not a GM. And if you bring in a GM where the manager doesn't respect the role, and you're trying to do almost the same things. You know, a lot of the rumors you heard about the clash between Melvin and Preller were about, members of the front office coming in and speaking directly to the players, things that were just kind of, they felt were invasive and micromanaging. So if you bring in a GM and they're still doing that, it's not productive. If you're bringing a GM that's just a mouthpiece for the president and is just used to still perform that role and still meddle basically, but also have that where they talk to the press, that's not going to solve anything. If they actually come in and they have a degree of autonomy and they're actually tasked with kind of managing the major league club in that way, maybe. But usually when you see a president and a general manager, it's not like that. I mean, you look at the Dodgers setup and Friedman's still very much in charge. You look at the Cubs and there's levels of control there where it's not the general manager. I don't know. Like, I always hear that and I feel like people don't really understand, like, the general manager's boss is still going to be the same person. It's like you see it on Twitter all the time where, like, once they know, like, okay, they're not going to make this change at the top, then people start to look for these band-aids. Well, what if we put a general manager under him? And I mean, that general manager is probably just going to be AJ Ellis or someone, right? So it would just be kind of the same deal, just with different titles.
Yeah. I mean, it in the coming weeks with, you know, the passing of Peter, it did always feel to, I think, everybody that like they had a special relationship between, you know, mm-hmm. AJ and Peter, and, you know, the person who's calling the shots in Peter's place, how are they going to be able to control Preller? Is Preller going to have the same autonomy that he had? It seemed to have with making decisions and going for it. It's going to be fascinating the next month or so in the off season. I mean, where are you on the Soto potential trade? Do you think that's probably the best move? If the idea, if we're having a cash flow problem, I don't know.
Yeah, if we're out of money.
Yeah. I mean, if you really want a $200 million budget or less, and you want to build a rotation, the problem is the free agent pitchers are going to cost what you just declined options on, if not more. So are you going to trade Juan Soto for that pitching, or are you going to trade the San Antonio prospects for that pitching? Those are kind of the options. And I think there's viability to both of them. But with Soto, I guess waiting till the deadline makes sense, but you still have to have a rotation going into the season. And with the Juan Soto deal, like, people are saying, like, yeah, he's arguably the best player on the team. And it's hard to say you're contending if you're going to trade him. I understand that. But at the same time, if he's not going to stay, what are your options? Yeah. If you're not going to be the free spending team, if you're going to keep a competitive budget, do you prepare for that, or do you let him walk like Freddie Freeman?
Hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, Mark, you do a lot of work with the Mad Friars. Who are some of the exciting prospects that we should be looking for? You know, now that we're going to be going back down in payroll, and prospects are going to be at the forefront probably for the next 10 years, I think that's usually how it works. But who do you think are some of the exciting players that you've seen that might jump onto people's radar this next season that aren't the number one, you know, the top prospects that everybody knows?
Yeah, I mean, obviously everyone saw that the Fall League guys put on a show. You had Jacob Marcy was, I think, the player of the year. I mean, he was just crushing the ball out there. He's a good center fielder. He's immediately the top center field prospect in the organization, which is important to have. And he's, you know, someone who could see major league innings next year, depending on how it goes. Graham Pauly was another guy who was in the Fall League who, you know, Pauly was interesting. He came out of Duke, and he was kind of a contact hitter at Lake Elsinore. And then he went to Fort Wayne. I don't know if it was a conscious adjustment or what, but all of a sudden he hit 13 home runs in very short order. And he was just a power hitter, and it carried on all the way through the end of the year. He's kind of a third baseman. I don't know if that's where he sticks all the time. I mean, obviously they have all kinds of infielders of the Padres. He can play corner, outfield, things like that. Yeah, beyond like your Solace and everyone like that. I mean, obviously for pitching, you've got Snelling, who the only real caution with Snelling is that everyone says, oh, he's ready to go right now. He's probably pretty competently ready to pitch major league innings right now. It's just that you don't want him throwing that many innings. He's never thrown that many. Mm-hmm. But, you know, getting past that group, you're they still don't have a tremendous amount of depth. But for the first time, they have some real top line guys like that group and Merrill and some others where there's that real potential of them filling in some spots with at least a few of those guys in the next few years. And it's one of those things with prospects. I think we try to talk about that somewhat at Mad Friars, and you hear it. People like to just look at all the prospects and they build a lineup with them. And I did this exact same thing when I was a kid. Yeah. I put Sean Burroughs at third, Matthews in the outfield, and all that. Odds are it won't play out that way. You know, Jackson Merrill could end up being a corner outfielder. He could end up being in another organization. They will probably trade at least one or two of these guys. It's not, it probably won't be like it was when they were just spending, because prospects were all trade capital and very few of them even put on a Padres uniform. You will probably see at least a few of them come up for sure.
Yeah. What, I mean, I, Ethan Salas is one that I saw at Elsinore. I mean, what do you think his track is going to be next year? Just he starts at AA. Is that?
I would imagine so. He didn't hit all that great once he got out of Lake Elsinore, but at the same time, you're reluctant to start a guy at a lower level. And, you know, most of the catchers above him were elected free agency. So they're not really looking at like a real raft of catchers in the upper level. So it's not like they'd want to send them down just to make sure other guys are getting playing time either. They're probably going to be bringing in a lot of minor league free agents. They might bring back a few of those guys like Michael Cantu and Chandler Siegel if they have the spots. But otherwise, yeah, he'll probably be in San Antonio breaking camp. I don't see why not.
He'll be like 19, right?
Yeah.
I think he's 17.
He turned 17 last year. So
well, his age right now, it says 17, but I don't know his birthday. He's still young.
He turns 18 in the
June 1st, 2006 is when he was born.
Okay.
So he'll be 18 in June.
Is that it?
Okay. Yeah. That's crazy. That's nuts. I don't know. He's that young. Jeez.
Yeah. Well, is there anything else anybody wants to say about Peter Seidler? Do you have anything, Travis? Or
no, it's just a really sad day for Padres, and it leaves a big hole to the future of the organization. I mean, he was a large force in the Padres community. He was like the chief, the top of the pyramid, and that's gone now. And like we've been talking about, the dynamic between him and AJ and the way that we were spending, you know, he was like the fun uncle who was like, look, we're going to Vegas and bring your credit card because it doesn't matter. You might die tomorrow, baby. You know, that kind of thing. And so,
yeah,
it's a lot of unknowns that I wasn't anticipating into this offseason. You know, there's always rumors about his health and stuff, but no one really knew. And it definitely was unexpected, and he'll be very, very missed.
Yeah, I hope that, like, you know, that there's some contracts on the books and, you know, some financial situations that we have with the roster that could hamstring us later down the line. But I hope everybody remembers the fun that we had with the signings that he made, you know, and not thinking about tomorrow. I think that was a kind of a freeing thing for all of us. So, hey, Mark, thanks for writing that the piece on the Kept Faith. Anytime you got anything for the Major League Club, you're welcome to post there anytime. But check out his stuff at Mad Friars, and they do great prospect writing, and they'll be following all the levels of the system all year round. You know, we're a David J podcast typically, but you know, we just thanks for coming on. You know, he he's that other generation. You know, the older.
Yeah, happy to fill David's shoes for a night and. Yeah, thanks for having me, definitely. And thanks for running that piece. I really appreciate it.
Cool. And you can follow Mark on Twitter. You can follow us at The Kept Faith at The Kept Faith at Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. We'll come back maybe in December when we have a new manager. Hopefully, we can unpack that, Travis. I think that'll be interesting. And then we'll see how he plays in AJ Preller's sandbox, and that'll be fun. But RIP to Peter Seidler. Thank you for all the good times. And I hope that the next person in charge, you know, however that is, they can come to the game with, you know, the same vitality and fun. It was just fun. Thanks for making it fun to be a Padres fan, Peter. So good night. Keep the faith, guys. See you next time. Bye.